Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Connie reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 10th, 2020. Midland ISD. Lawsuit targets MISD for Lee renaming process. Board President. MISD Board of Trustees has the legal authority to make school naming decisions, just like the MISD Board of Trustees had in 1961, when the school was first named, and every year since. By Stuart Doreen. A Midland County resident is seeking a temporary restraining order and temporary and permanent injunction against Midland ISD as the district attempts to rename Robert E. Lee High School and Freshman School. Jeremy Shane Mansell is listed as the plaintiff, and Midland ISD and its board are listed as the defendants. Mansell filed the petition in the 238th District Court and emailed a copy of the lawsuit to the Reporter Telegram. Midland ISD Board President Rick Davis responded to the Reporter Telegram about the lawsuit Wednesday afternoon. The lawsuit states that MISD was not operating in compliance with the Texas Education Code by not having constituted a district-level decision-making committee before, on, or about July 27th, when they considered whether to rename Robert E. Lee Senior High and Robert E. Lee Freshman in violation of Texas Education Code 11.251B-E. In response, Davis wrote, "The crux of the suit appears to be that the board did not have the legal authority to make that decision. In making that allegation, the plaintiff refers to statutes that are not applicable to a school board's school naming decision. Contrary to what the plaintiff alleges, the MISD Board of Trustees has the legal authority to make school naming decisions just like the MISD Board of Trustees had in 1961, when the school was first named, and every year since." The lawsuit also states that MISD is proposing a de facto taxation of the plaintiff where they have no right or authority to do so in violation of Texas State Constitution Article 8 by voting to change the names of the school, which will have to be paid for with taxpayer monies not apportioned in the MISD 2019-20 budget. The lawsuit also states that board members considered an online petition started in June 2020 on change.org that is in violation of Texas Election Code in that the petition contained no verifiable addresses, date of birth, voter registration numbers, or signatures. The suit also alleges that MISD unlawfully accepted and considered an online petition regarding the name change, Davis wrote. While the board was aware of the petition, both for and against changing the name of Robert E. Lee High School and Freshman School, the board did not create or receive these petitions. The lawsuit also states, "The plaintiff therefore seeks a temporary restraining order and temporary injunction relief to preserve the status quo pending a final judgment on merits," the lawsuit states. Absent such injunctive relief, MISD Board has indicated they will move forward with physical removal of property and effects in a process that may cost between $400,000 and $2 million and provides no inventory or storage of items to be removed. Davis said those interested in watching a recording of the meeting can do so at Midland ISD's website. He added that residents were able to watch the meeting live and call into the public comment portion of that meeting. Because I have not actually been served with the lawsuit, it is my hope that the plaintiff will voluntarily choose to dismiss it, Davis wrote. The Midland ISD Board voted on July 27th to rename Robert E. Lee High School and Robert E. Lee Freshman High School. It then created a committee to oversee the renaming process. That committee is scheduled to meet this week to narrow down a list of 5 names to 3, according to previous reports. The Reporter-Telegram has attempted to contact both Mansell and MISD about the lawsuit. The following is a response from Midland ISD Board President Rick Davis in its entirety. Wednesday, I was forwarded a copy of a lawsuit purportedly filed by a Midland County resident concerning the MISD Board of Trustees, July 27, 2020, decision to rename Robert E. Lee High School and Robert E. Lee Freshman School. The crux of the suit appears to be that the board did not have the legal authority to make that decision. In making that allegation, the plaintiff refers to statutes that are not applicable to a school board's school naming decision. Contrary to what the plaintiff alleges, the MISD Board of Trustees has the legal authority to make school naming decisions just like the MISD Board of Trustees had in 1961 when the school was first named and every year since. The suit also alleges that MISD unlawfully accepted and considered an online petition regarding the name change. While the board was aware of petitions both for and against changing the name of Robert E. Lee High School and Freshman School, the board did not create or receive these petitions. A recording of the meeting is available at https://www.midlandisd.net/page/33198, and any member of the public who wished to do so was able to watch the meeting live at midlandisd.net/stream or call in during the public comment period. Because I have not actually been served with the lawsuit, it is my hope that the plaintiff will voluntarily choose to dismiss it. Coronavirus. MMH. Visitation rules will be modified slightly. By Stuart Doreen. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said Tuesday that Midland Memorial Hospital will slightly modify its interpretation of the state's visitation rules. Myers said during a weekly press conference that while he doesn't expect any movement from the state until early October, he expected conversations to take place around the hospital about what really constitutes a patient with a critical illness. Meyer said most of the guidelines already in place will be reinforced, but the hospital will allow for some discretion on the part of the clinical managers on the individual patient care units, especially around patients who have what we would classify as a critical illness. And those definitions are a little bit soft, so we're going to give some discretion to the clinical managers to allow for a little bit more visitation than we've done in the recent past, Meyer said. And we'll see if that helps just a little bit, recognizing that nothing short of full visitation is going to be adequate for many of our patients and their families. We're sorry. We can't get all the way to that, but we're going to take small steps in the direction for our sickest patients and those in the most critical condition. Since June 25th, visitors for most inpatients and outpatients have not been allowed at Midland Memorial Hospital. Exceptions to the policy are personnel, wristband issued at the entrance, adult family members of end-of-life or critically ill patients, wristband issued at entrance, adult family members of patients needing critical assistance, wristband issued at the entrance. Mothers on the labor and delivery unit will be allowed one support person and one doula during the birthing process, one support person on the mother-baby unit. Pediatric patients will be allowed one parent or guardian. Parents' guardian may switch out during the day. One parent guardian may stay with the patient at all times, including overnight. Wristband to be issued by pediatric staff. NICU limited visitation will follow the most current guidelines. On Wednesday, Midland Health released its temporary visitation policy update that included requests for exemption need to be directed to the clinical manager of the unit. Every visitor entering the facility still will be screened for symptoms, with questions listed in the screening process at entrances to the facility. According to the policy, and all support persons coming to the hospital will be screened and need to have a face covering, such as a mask, scarf, or other fabric covering their nose and mouth. Steering into fall. Under the photo, the caption reads, Emmett Seabaugh enjoys the cool weather Thursday to practice his roping in the parking lot at the Midland College dorms. A high temperature difference of 39 degrees. How strong was the front that blew in Tuesday evening? Well, the temperature dropped 23 degrees in an hour. The National Weather Service 6:53 p.m. report showed a temperature of 88 degrees. By the 7:53 p.m. report, the temperature fell to 65 degrees. Wind gusts reached 41 miles per hour. But the difference went beyond that. The high temperature on Tuesday was 92. The high on Wednesday was 53. That was a difference of 39 degrees in 24 hours. The coldest high temperature. 53 degrees was the coldest high for a September 9th in Midland's history. In fact, the high temperature was 24 degrees lower than the previous coldest high temperature, 67, set in 1948. A record low of 46 degrees. Another record was set Wednesday morning when temperatures dropped into the mid to upper 40s. It was the first time on a September 9th in Midland that the low temperature fell below 50 degrees. The previous record low for a September 9th was 50 degrees set in 2004. Rainfall, 0.83 inches. The rainfall last Tuesday evening, early Wednesday, helped a region that has been parched for the better part of 5 months. Prior to September 8th, the NWS reported that 0.74 inch had fallen since April. On Tuesday evening alone, 0.82 inches, that amount was topped. The rainfall pushed the year-to-date total to 6.84 inches, which is still 3.48 inches below normal for the year through September 9th. But for a region experiencing extreme drought, the rainfall was needed. The art of graphic novels. Under the photo reads, "Bam! It's a picture book. The art behind graphic novels." Exhibit is unpacked Tuesday at the Ellen Noel Art Museum. The exhibit opens Thursday. Graphic novel exhibit. Photography exhibit on view at Ellen Noel by J.C. Lewis. The Ellen Noel Art Museum is currently displaying Ned Bosnick's Texas. Today, the BAM. It's a picture book, The Art Behind Graphic Novels. Exhibit will open. It is on loan from the National Center for Children's Illustrated Literature. Both exhibits take viewers on a storytelling adventure. Ellen Noel Art Museum curator Daniel Zias said the museum had to change shows because of coronavirus, but found two shows that complement each other. Ned Bosnick's Texas takes views on a storytelling journey through Texas towns. The exhibit features a compilation of photographs that Bosnick took of 150 Texas towns, including Midland and Odessa. He arranged the photographs in a cinematic or storyboard manner to take viewers on a journey across the state, Ziri said. The graphic novel exhibit features comics from five different graphic artists, including Raina Telegemir, Matthew Holm, Mark Criley, Lincoln Pierce, and Jared J. Karaskasi. The exhibit includes artwork from iconic books such as Baby Moose, Big Nate, Lunch Lady, Broody's Ghost, and Smile. This exhibit really shows how to tell a story on the visual and literacy side of things, he said. BAM, It's a Picture Book, The Art Behind Graphic Novels, will be on display until November 8th, and Ned Bosnick's Texas will be on view until November 1st. The museum is also changing pieces in its permanent collection gallery. Zias said the museum isn't doing school tours with ECISD, but will have virtual tours with videos and photos on the museum's website. He said they are also working on ways to provide craft kits for students that aren't able to view exhibits. Want to draw comics? The museum is teaming up with UTPB, Pots and Prints, Odessa Arts, and The Hive Comics for Art a la Carte on September 18th. The event is 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and will feature comic book character drawings and a talk about the history behind comic book collecting. Due to coronavirus policies, a limited number of visitors will be allowed in at a time, and masks are required. City. Number of Midland COVID cases drops to 12, from staff reports. The Midland Health Department reported only 12 new coronavirus cases Wednesday. The total brings the number of cases in Midland County this week to 59, which through 3 days is 24 less than the total through Wednesday of last week. The number of cases so far this week is actually less than through Tuesday of last week. There have been 3,421 cases during the pandemic. Wednesday's new cases are reflective of lab results from Tuesday, the health department reported. The health department also reported 1,238 active cases, 22 less than Tuesday, 1,929 recovered, 32 more, and 74 COVID-19 related deaths. No change. Coronavirus report. Cases Tuesday, 49. Cases Wednesday, 12. Cases this week, 59. Cases through Wednesday of last week, 83. Cases during the pandemic, 3,421. Gardendale man dies in SH-158 accident, from staff reports. An 18-year-old Gardendale man died as a result of a one-vehicle fatality early Sunday morning in Midland County. The Department of Public Safety reported on Wednesday that Ryan E. Reyes was dead at the scene after his 2005 GMC Sierra left the roadway and struck a utility pole 5 miles northwest of Midland. Reyes was traveling north on State Highway 158. Reyes was wearing a seatbelt. Reyes is the 18th person to die on roads in Midland County this year, and the first since mid-August, according to Reporter Telegram reports. OPD. Man arrested in connection to 120 assault by J.C. Lewis. A man was arrested in connection to aggravated assault Tuesday, according to a press release. Odessa police arrested Matthew Aaron Barnett, 34, for 3 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, attempt to take a weapon from a peace officer, resisting search or transport, and driving while intoxicated. At 2:26 p.m. Tuesday, an OPD officer was traveling on Interstate 20 near Farm to Market Road 1936 when he observed the driver of a blue Ford pickup physically assaulting the driver of a green Ford Mustang. The male subject, later identified as Barnett, began violently swinging his arms and hands at the officer. The officer attempted to place Barnett into custody, but Barnett resisted arrest by pushing away from the officer. Barnett then attempted to retrieve the officer's gun by gripping and pulling it several times. With the assistance of a couple of citizens, Barnett was placed into custody. An investigation revealed that Barnett had been driving recklessly and intentionally ramming other vehicles, forcing multiple motorists off the roadway. Barnett then exited his vehicle and threatened other motorists with a metal pipe. 3 of the motorists advised that they wished to file charges on Barnett. Investigation revealed that Barnett was intoxicated. Based on the facts and circumstances presented during the investigation, Barnett was charged and arrested accordingly. He was transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. OPD. Odessa man is dead after car Pedestrian Crash Tuesday by J.C. Lewis. An Odessa man died after a car pedestrian crash that occurred Tuesday night in northeast Odessa, according to a press release. At about 8:35 p.m., Odessa police responded to 52nd Street and Grandview in reference to a crash involving a pedestrian. Investigation revealed that a white 2008 Nissan Maxima was traveling northbound in the 5100 block of North Grandview and struck a pedestrian. The pedestrian, identified as 64-year-old Antonio Martinez Lujan of Odessa, was attempting to walk eastbound across Grandview, not at a crosswalk. Lujan was pronounced deceased on the scene, and there were no reports of any other injuries. Next of kin were notified, and the investigation continues. OPD, Man Charged in Theft of Construction Equipment by J.C. Lewis. A man was charged for the theft of construction equipment, according to a press release. Odessa police charged Ricardo Hernandez Jr., 30, on Sunday for theft of property, a state felony. On August 26th, officers responded to the 1300 block of South Grant in reference to a yellow Caterpillar skid steer that had been stolen from a construction site. Through the course of the investigation, the suspect was identified as Hernandez. Officers located him in the 5000 block of East Highway 80. And the stolen skid steer was located in the 300 block of East Ada. Hernandez admitted to detectives that he had attempted to sell the stolen property online. Based on the facts and circumstances presented during the investigation, OPD detectives obtained a warrant for Hernandez, who was charged and arrested accordingly.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 10, 2020. Miss Casey's opens. Miss Casey's Wonderland, 1012 Andrews Highway, opens today for its 36th season. The store's hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 2 to 6 p.m. Sunday. For more information, visit MissCaseysWonderland.com. Firefighters doing virtual fill the boot. The International Association of Firefighters and Professional Firefighters Association of Midland, Local 4405, are doing a virtual fill the boot, which will take the place of the annual in-person campaign for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Instead of placing donations in boots held up by Midland firefighters at intersections across Midland, residents can donate at filltheboot.donordrive.com/participant/Midland. The virtual campaign continues through the end of the year, said Greg Wells with Midland Local 4405. Their goal is $5,000, according to the website. It's Summer Mummers time! The 73rd annual Summer Mummers event will look a little different this year. Summer Mummers will air their first live fundraising telethon, Pandemic Plea for Pennies, 7 to 10 p.m. Saturday on K-West TV. Staged at the historic Yucca Theater, the telethon will feature some live shots and acts, including skits from the popular Olio, dance acts, and melodrama. Donations will be accepted in person at the Yucca Theater, by phone or online at www.mctmidland.org. Summer Mummers raises about 37% of Midland Community Theater's annual budget to help support year-round productions, live entertainment, and education programs, according to an email from MCT's development director. Because of COVID-19, the 2020 Summer Mummers season, 28 shows over the course of 14 weekends, June through August, was canceled. For more information, visit mctmidland.org or facebook.com/summerm. Know a member of the military coming home? Military families can call 352-0785 or email Vicki Gomez, ZEMOGV at cable1.net, when they know their member of the military is flying into Midland International Airport, so the Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee can be there to greet them. Honor those who served. There are many organizations in operation right here in the Permian Basin that are at the task of serving all kinds of needs for present and former members of our military. Some of them are Show of Support, 687-2167, Honor Our Troops, 889-0177, Real Thanks, 528-6633, Centers for Children and Families, 570-1084, Midland College Veterans Affairs Office, 685-4511, Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee, 366-3458, Soldiers of Today and Yesterday, 631-3429. Today in History. Today's Thursday, September 10, the 254th day of 2020. There are 112 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history. On September 10, 1962, the U.S. Supreme Court ordered the University of Mississippi to admit James Meredith, a black student. On this date, in 1813, an American naval force commanded by Oliver H. Perry defeated the British in the Battle of Lake Erie during the War of 1812. Afterward, Perry sent the message, "We have met the enemy, and they are ours." In 1846, Elias Howe received a patent for a sewing machine. In 1935, Senator Huey P. Long died in Baton Rouge 2 days after being shot in the Louisiana State Capitol, allegedly by Dr. Carl Weiss. In 1987, Pope John Paul II arrived in Miami, where he was welcomed by President Ronald Reagan and First Lady Nancy Reagan as he began a 10-day tour of the United States. In 1991, the Senate Judiciary Committee opened hearings on the nomination of Clarence Thomas to the U.S. Supreme Court. In 2005, cadaver dogs and boatloads of forensic workers fanned out across New Orleans to collect the corpses left behind by Hurricane Katrina. Cleanup crews towed away abandoned cars and even began raiding a hotel for reopening. In 2006, Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts defeated Eli Manning and the New York Giants 26-21 in the first NFL game to feature two brothers starting at quarterback. In 2016, John Hinckley Jr., the man who tried to assassinate President Ronald Reagan in 1981, was released from a Washington mental hospital for good. In 2018, Florence exploded into a potentially catastrophic Category 4 hurricane as it closed in on North and South Carolina with winds up to 140 miles per hour. Source AP.
Opinion Extra. There is a vaccine for the flu. Get your flu shot. By Stuart Doreen. Earlier this week, Midland Health CEO Russell Myers was asked about the importance of a flu shot this year. "That sounds like a planted question," Myers said during the weekly press. "Yes, you should get a flu shot this year. You should not hesitate to get one, and you should do it as soon as they're available. This will be the first flu season when coronavirus, COVID-19, also is in the community. The Mayo Clinic said it is possible for both viruses to spread in a community at the same time. And in both cases, people who become seriously ill could cause hospitals to become full. Not surprisingly, many of the same steps one takes to avoid COVID-19 will help reduce the risk of infection from the flu. Avoiding large events and mass gatherings, social distancing, washing your hands, covering your mouth and nose with your elbow or a tissue when you sneeze or cough, cleaning and disinfecting high-touch surfaces, and yes, wearing a mask. The viruses spread through respiratory droplets or aerosols released through talking, sneezing, or coughing, the Mayo Clinic reports on its website. These droplets can land in the mouth or nose of someone nearby or be inhaled. These viruses can also spread if a person touches a surface with one of the viruses on it and then touches his or her mouth, nose, or eyes. There are going to be many who have grown tired of being on high alert when it comes to coronavirus. The expectation here is that some people won't be particularly thrilled that flu season, and all that means, is fast approaching. But here is what we know. The flu is bad news, Myers said so during his news conference. If you get the flu, you want it to be a minor case, that's for sure. Having gotten once in my life, I never want to repeat it again. And I've never missed a flu vaccine since that 1 year that I had the actual flu. The Mayo Clinic reports that both COVID-19 and the flu can lead to serious complications, such as pneumonia, acute respiratory distress syndrome, organ failure, heart attacks, heart or brain inflammation, stroke, and death. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report 12,000 to 61,000 deaths associated with the flu annually since 2010. The number of deaths associated with the coronavirus in the U.S. is just shy of 190,000, according to Johns Hopkins University of Medicine website. Reviews of past studies have found that the flu vaccine is about 50% to 60% effective for healthy adults who are between 18 and 64 years old, the Mayo Clinic website states. Even when the vaccine doesn't completely prevent the flu, it may lessen the severity of your illness and reduce the risk of serious complications and serious illness requiring hospitalization. And while the flu vaccine does not prevent you from getting COVID-19, the Mayo Clinic reminds people that it's especially important to get the flu vaccine this season because the flu and coronavirus disease cause similar symptoms. Flu vaccinations could reduce symptoms that might be confused with those caused by COVID-19, the Mayo Clinic reports. Preventing the flu and reducing the severity of flu illness and hospitalizations could also lessen the number of people needing to stay in the hospital. Sounds like a good enough reason for me. Here's hoping Midlanders put their own health and the health of others first and get their flu shots. Beatrice Owens Finner. Beatrice Faye Owens Finner of Midland, Texas, departed our earthly home to be with the Lord on Sunday, September 6, 2020, at the age of 87. Better known as Nana B to her many grandchildren, Nanny B was a lover of life with a vivacious spirit. Born on January 24, 1933, in Sulphur Springs, Arkansas, to Flora and R.H. Brown, B. was raised on a farm in Pecos, Texas. In Pecos, she went to school and married the love of her life, Gene Owens, in 1950. There, they had four children. After the passing of her husband, B. moved to Midland, Texas, where she met her second love, Edward Finner. Beatrice is survived by her children, son Darren G. Owens of Bryan and his wife Lori, daughter Linda Ortegan of San Angelo and her husband Manuel, daughter Holly Barrett of Austin and her husband Barrett, Brett, son Tim Owens of Midland and his wife Irma, and stepson Dr. Jim Finner of Las Vegas, Nevada, and his wife, Jeannie. Her 7 grandchildren, along with their spouses, and 13 great-grandchildren, 1 great-great-grandchild, Sister Doris Gerber of Walnut Creek, California, and Brother Terry Brown of Taos. B was preceded in death by her husband, Gene Owens, who died in 1998, husband Ed Finner, who died in 2013, and grandson Christopher Heath, who died in 2019. The family would like to express their gratitude towards the Midland Memorial Hospital staff and friends and members of the Rocking Chair Rockets Line Dancers from Midland Senior Citizen, and for their care and support during this difficult time. A visitation will be held on Friday, September 11th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Natalie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory. Funeral services will be on Saturday, September 12th at 10 a.m. in the chapel of First Baptist Church of Midland. A family interment will follow at Fairview Cemetery in Pecos. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Senior Life Midland, Post Office Box 80519, Midland, Texas 79708. Carl Rice, McCamey. A longtime resident of McCamey, Carl Rice, 66, died Friday, August 14th, from injuries sustained in an automobile accident on Highway 385 south of Crane. A native of Pennsylvania, Rice was a longtime employee of Cooper Construction. Born on November 24, 1953, in Susquehanna, Pennsylvania, he graduated from Susquehanna Community School. He later married a young woman named Bonnie, whom he met in Susquehanna. The couple moved to McCamey in 1982, and Rice started employment on March 1st with Cooper Construction as the project foreman on a McCamey school addition. Rice was preceded by Lawrence and Betty Rice. Survivors include his wife, Bonnie, his son, Carl Rice, Jr., and partner, Michelle, brothers-in-law, Wayne Heath and Terry Heath, a sister-in-law, Tammy, a niece, Sarah, and nephews, Brett, Brian, Adam, Matt, and Tyler, and great many friends. As Carl would say, you know who you are. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, September 12, 2020, at Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff Road, Midland, Texas, with Friar Jonathan Hartzer officiating. The family suggests making a donation to the charity of your choice in lieu of flowers. Arrangements were handled by Schaefer Nicholas Funeral Homes and Chapel of Crane and McCamey. Isa Velasquez Romero. Isa Velasquez Romero, 80, lost his fight against cancer on Saturday, September 5, 2020, at his residence surrounded by his family. He was born June 3, 1940, to the late Norberto Romero and Timotea Romero in Ruidoso, Texas. He worked as a concrete contractor all of his life. Later in life, he married Della Jose Romero, and they were married for 54 years until her death in August of 2016. Isa is preceded in death by his parents, his wife Della, and his son Isa Jr. Bullitt, also by his brothers Manuel Romero, Domingo Romero, Dolores Romero, and three sisters, Paula, Teherini, Marcela Rivas, and Gonzala Mendoza. He is survived by his brothers Jose Romero of Midland and Fermin Romero of Midland. He is also survived by his children Victoria McIntyre and her husband Rob of Albuquerque, New Mexico, Sylvia Moreno and husband Angel of Midland, J.C. Chavez of Midland, Albert Romero of Austin, Pete Romero of Midland, Jimmy Romero and his family, Lila of Midland, and Elsima Gonzalez, Shame, and husband Juan of Midland. He is also survived by one grandson, which he raised, Austin Romero of Midland. He is also survived by 27 grandchildren, numerous great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. A viewing will be held Thursday, September 10th, 2020, beginning at 10 a.m. Rosary will be held later that same day, beginning at 7 p.m. Funeral service will be held Friday, September 11th, 2020, at 10 a.m. Burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Ryan Reyes. Ryan Edmundo Reyes, 18 of Gardendale, passed away on Sunday, September 6, 2020. Viewing will take place 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wednesday, September 9, 2020, at Natalie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. A rosary will be held 7 p.m. Wednesday, September 9, 2020, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. The funeral mass will take place at 10 a.m. Thursday, September 10, 2020, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Burial will be on Saturday, September 12, 2020, at the Kirkland Cemetery in Kirkland, New Mexico. Ryan was born on May 10, 2002, in Farmington, New Mexico, to Edmundo Reyes and Vanessa Verlia. Ryan is survived by his parents, Edmundo and Vanessa, by his sister, Yulisa, and nephew, Mateo. He is also survived by his paternal grandparents, Efren and Aveda Reyes, by his maternal grandfather, Jose Negrete, uncles and aunts, Lucita Jaime, Freddie Anaha, Alice Albert, Yodina Juan Carlos, Martha Jose, Efren Elisa, Patsy Jorge, cousins and cousins. Ryan is preceded in death by his brother, Jesus Arturo Reyes, and grandmother, Julia Barriala. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made to www.mpwelch.com. Death notices. Lorenzo Aguilar Molinar. Lorenzo Molinar, 84, of Odessa, passed away on Monday, September 7, 2020. Viewing will be held Thursday, September 10, 2020, at 7695 West Ivory Street, Odessa, Texas. Burial will be at a later date in Mexico. He is survived by his three sons, Mateus Molinar, Hugo Molinar, and Oswaldo Molinar, five daughters, Zenea Arroyo, Velia Molinar, Carmen Molinar, Maricela Molinar, and Maria de Lourdes Molinar. two sisters, numerous grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nephews, nieces, and cousins. Peggy Lou Winterland. Peggy Lou Winterland, 70, of Midland, Texas, passed away Monday, September 7, 2020, in Dallas. A family reception will be held 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, September 11, 2020, at the First Baptist Church Welcome Center. Funeral service will be 2 p.m. Saturday, September 12, 2020, at First Baptist Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Retha L. Maxey. Retha L. Maxey, 68, of Midland, passed from this life on September 6, 2020. She was born to the late Otis and Irma Gregor, February 10, 1952, in Idabel, Oklahoma. She is survived by daughter Stacy Reed and one sister, Donna Prophet. A memorial service will be held Saturday, September 12, 2020, 3 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, September 10th, 2020. Front page. Odessa sewer water rates going up. Taxes will also increase for Odessans. By Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O, at OAOA.com. Odessans will pay more in both taxes and water and sewer rates as the Odessa City Council voted on multiple items during Tuesday night's council meeting to approve increases to rates for the 2020 tax year. Both the mayor and a city councilman on Wednesday defended the increases as necessary, with one calling the rate increase a small increment. Mayor David Turner, who is seeking the at-large council seat in November, said in a phone interview Wednesday that part of the water and sewer increase is due to clay and concrete pipes rupturing. Over the last few years, we've tried to increase that amount in the budget because if it breaks in an emergency, it costs more than planning to change out the pipe. District 2 Councilman Dewey Bryant, who is running for mayor in November, said Wednesday that aging pipe must be fixed. A couple cents rather than do a huge increase all at once. I'd rather see a smaller type to help take care of these issues, and I think that's what we're looking at. That's what I was looking at primarily on these things. It's just a small increment. Information Officer Devin Sanchez wrote in an email regarding solid waste that the landfill rate increased, and that increase was budgeted for the upcoming fiscal year. District 1 Councilman Michael K. Shelton did not return phone calls by press time. Assistant City Manager of Administrative Services Cindy Muncy on Tuesday told Council during the virtual meeting that this would be the first approval of an ordinance to raise water, sewer, and solid waste rates by 2.5%. The water and sewer rates are being increased to allow for us to increase our repair and replacement of our deteriorating water and sewer lines, she said, showing council that while a 2,000 gallons a month user currently pays $51.62, they would pay $52.91 with the increase. She showed that a 50,000 gallon a month user currently paying $340.20 would have to pay an extra $8.51. And while senior disabled users with minimal usage, small meters, currently pay $43.42, they would have to pay an extra $1.08 at $44.50. We have not raised our water rates since 2015-16 fiscal year, and at that time we did an 8% increase, and in discussions with council about our water and sewer lines, after we reviewed our master plan, we wanted to look at doing some small increases each year to help cover those costs. She said, adding that sewer rates have not increased since 2012. We have a lot of cement and clay pipes in our sewer lines that need to be replaced, and the goal is to start doing some of that using our additional increase in revenue, she said. Council approved increases to the water, sewer, and solid waste rates unanimously in three separate votes, which was the first approval of the rate changes. Council also unanimously approved the first vote of an increased tax rate for the 2020-21 fiscal year. The agenda detailed that the tax rate adopted is 47.7115 cents per $100 property valuation for municipal maintenance, operations, and debt service. The current tax rate is 47.6601. This includes the 20% general residential homestead exemption, senior citizen exemption of $15,000, disabled person exemption of $5,000, disabled veteran exemption of $5,000 to $12,000, and other state-mandated exemptions, the agenda stated. Council previously spoke about sticking with the effective no new revenue tax rate, which includes added amounts from higher appraisals and new property. A previous OA article detailed that many in Odessa have reported tax appraisals coming in at 8 to 12% higher than they were last year. A higher appraisal means higher taxes if the city doesn't drop the tax rate to bring in the same amount as they did last year. Muncy said that there was a decrease in total taxable value of more than $20 million. We took a decrease in our commercial personal property. We also had an increase in our real estate, she said. Muncy said that the increases in taxes to homeowners after adopting the no new revenue rate is due to the increase in the value of those properties. The no new revenue was 0.77115, and the second vote on the tax increase will be on September 15th. Council also voted unanimously to adopt the City of Odessa FY 2020-21 annual budget, which showed a reduction in sales tax projections. Muncy said that the budget, quote, does not include any cost of living increases for employees. We are currently in a hiring freeze except for essential personnel, mostly our public safety and utility people, she said, adding that there is a 10% decrease in sales tax revenue, she said, adding that it is 21% less than last year.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.